If we learn how to do bigger cases, we are asking the patients for bigger commitments. If we're going to ask the patient for a bigger commitment, but not improve our process of asking them, we're going to get this teeter-totter effect.
This is Growth in Dentistry, a dental intelligence podcast, where we ask the question, what does growth in dentistry mean to you? I'm Steve Jensen, a data dental nerd and your host. Welcome everyone for another episode of the Growth in Dentistry podcast. As always, I am super excited for today's episode. Before we jump in, I just want to give a huge shout out to the marketing team at Dental Intelligence week after week for sponsoring this podcast and putting in all of the work behind the scenes to get these out to you. It's a ton of work and I'm grateful for them. They always have a cool offer for everyone. So if you haven't checked out Dental Intelligence for a while, there's some really cool new releases, things like customized scorecards, automated messaging that's going out for recare messages, for payments. We have insurance claims processing. That's been a huge topic in the industry. So if you haven't checked it out in a while, come check it out. They'll give you a $50 gift card just for looking at Dental Intelligence. The link will be in the show notes to get that offer. Now, without any further ado, I said I'm excited about today's episode, and I've got Scott Luna with us. If you haven't heard of Scott, Scott has been coaching and educating in dentistry. And Scott, you can tell me how many years. It has been a long time, and he's a clinical doctor. How many years has it been, Scott?
Yeah, it's been, 18, 19 years, something like that.
So I'll say this about Scott. I got into dentistry about 6 years ago, and I started looking all over the place. Like, who can teach me the business of dentistry better than anybody else? I, as part of my job, attended conferences all over the place. And I will tell you, without a doubt, Scott's education was the most impactful thing I have had in my software dental career when I was trying to wrap my mind around the business of dentistry and best practices. Not only is Scott a skilled educator, but he is data-driven. He is focused on improvement, and he will make sure that he brings the best possible operating procedures, the best possible leadership guidance to you. And I couldn't be more excited to have Scott on the show today. Now, I want to frame it this way. So welcome, Scott.
Yeah, thank you.
What we're going to talk about specifically is a trend I've been noticing in our global data for dental intelligence. So we've got just over 10,000 practices that we work with, which also means we get to monitor their analytics. And here's what I want to talk about. Financial pressures in the market are increasing. So doctors are looking for, how do I produce more in my business? How can I, you know, I've got 1,200 patients or 1,500 patients. How do I get more out of this business? And so logically, I think the thought is, well, I'll diagnose more dentistry. And if I get more dentistry diagnosed and enhance some of my skills, then therefore I'm going to produce more per patient on average. And so what's interesting is there has definitely been a trend in the last 3 years. The average treatment getting diagnosed per exam has been going up, and it's up several hundred dollars per exam, which is, by the way, hard to do with 10,000 practices to get $200 worth of a lift. But what's I don't know if it's concerning or kind of a bummer is that I'm also watching treatment dollar case acceptance come down at the same rate that the presentation is going up with. So when we net out this effect of I'm presenting more dentistry, but I'm getting less dentistry accepted, it ends up being about the same amount of dentistry. So what I wanted to have Scott come on and really talk about is this problem, because really what we want to have happen is we want to be able to present more dentistry and have patients still say yes to that. And that's when we're going to get big wins as a business. So Scott, I'm going to shut my mouth and let you talk a little bit about that problem, what I just shared.
Yeah, well, let's first define what it means to diagnose more.
Cool.
It might be better to define what it does not mean. It does not mean diagnose things patients don't need. It does not mean being overly aggressive, doing the wrong thing, treating people the wrong way because we're chasing more dollars. And I don't think that is what's happening necessarily in dentistry. I think what's happening in dentistry is dentists continue to evolve their skills. They continue to invest in technology. They learn new things. New things become available to patients. I mean, 20 years ago, if we were going to do, you know, all on X treatment compared to today, it was a whole different ballgame. Doctors are learning how to do higher levels of care while patients continue to need more dentistry. The result of that is that these more skilled doctors are diagnosing more procedures because they've learned how to do them. They've learned how to diagnose them. But what a horrible, sad thing to have the teeter-totter effect as our diagnosis goes up because we've invested this time to learn new great things for the patient. The patients are saying no. And the end result is, you're absolutely right, it could have this kind of negating effect where no matter how much more we learn how to do, we don't seem to actually grow financially from it. And actually we get more no's. And you know, how does that impact our goodwill, our patient trust? So the way I like to think about this is, if we learn how to do bigger cases, we are asking the patients for bigger commitments. If we're gonna ask the patient for a bigger commitment, but not improve our process of asking them, we're gonna get this teeter-totter effect. In other words, the more I diagnose, the more elevated my case acceptance systems and skills must be, so that I don't have this kind of push-pull effect of the physics of increasing the dollar amount. And where does this kind of case acceptance live? Where does it come from? I think a very good initial way to think about it is that there's two primary types of case acceptance. There's the clinical side of case acceptance, and then there's the financial side of case acceptance. The financial side does not involve the doctor. Although when patients get strong clinical, the financial side is, of course, easier to say yes to. Let me explain that a little better. If I needed a heart procedure and I understood it clinically, and I'm like, oh my Lord, all in, yes, I need to get this procedure. No matter how bad the treatment coordinator is at the hospital, I'm still going to probably get that heart procedure done. So clinical case acceptance can trump weaknesses on the financial side. But also, strong financial systems can improve any weaknesses that a doctor might have on the clinical side, especially as we start diagnosing more. So I think this conversation is probably best organized, you know, in that way. What are the things that cause financial case acceptance to go up? What are the things that we need to be adding on the clinical side to have good case acceptance as we increase the kind of commitment we're asking for patients? Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And I'm interested to know where you want to start. Like, I was listening to you talk about the clinical side, and I think, okay, like a heart surgery, I don't even have heart problems, but if like I know my heart's going to stop and there's something they can do to fix it, then for sure, like I'm opening my wallet and it's there. In dentistry, I mean, I'm sure it's the same with healthcare providers, you know, on that extreme case, like logically I connected there, but then all of a sudden you start to get some of these nuances of, okay, like what if my teeth don't hurt and you're trying to present something to me? So I don't know if you want to start on the clinical side.
Let's dive in. So yeah, dying in dentistry from, yeah, you know, what we typically diagnose. However, it's not about life or death.
Mm-hmm.
Think about
there needs to be some urgency though, right? Like I feel like that was a huge part of like the heart thing. It's like urgent, like I need it now. So is it urgency that's the thing, or like what's the thing?
No, it's understanding the story of the disease. So let me explain this to you. We'll start with something really simple. Periodontal disease. Okay, we've normalized it. We've normalized losing bone. We've normalized teeth falling out. Can you imagine in medicine, you go to a hospital, you're told you have an infection in your hand and your fingers are going to fall off?
No.
You'd be freaking out. It's not life or death. You'd be freaking out. Your body parts are going to fall off. You're going to have a nose and two ears and some eyebrows fall off. You'd be freaking out. And somehow we've normalized teeth falling off. We've normalized it in our conversation. And what happens is when we normalize it, we don't actually tell the story correctly of periodontal disease, the patient loses sense of why they should compromise their schedule and compromise their money to make dentistry a priority. If we don't have good case acceptance verbiage and imagery, then the patients start using excuses like, I don't have time, I don't have money. Which is so funny because they sure do have the money for a $1,200 computer in their kid's pocket and a $50,000 SUV they're driving in, mm-hmm. but they don't have money to prevent their body parts from falling off. The problem isn't money. The problem is they don't understand the disease progression. So let me like show you how communication strategy can completely change the patient's perspective of the treatment they need. We dentists are unfortunately wired to be engineers in thinking and in communication. So when we typically talk to patients, I'm not saying we're the really weird dentites that just like go way overboard. I'm just saying a regular dentist fails at this. A regular dentist talks a lot about the dentistry they do. What we need to do instead is we need to talk about the story of this disease. So I'll just do it. Patient, I'm very worried because I found a gum infection in your mouth that eats away at parts of your jawbone, the part of the jawbone that actually holds your teeth in. And while this is painless in the beginning, as this infection progresses, which it will, you'll lose more and more bone until your teeth get loose and your teeth fall out. If you've ever known anyone to lose teeth before, this is why. This is why people lose teeth. Now, your teeth aren't loose yet. You don't have any pain yet because it's the beginning stage. But let me explain to you what will happen. As this infection progresses in your mouth and you lose more bone and they get loose, it becomes very painful. And when you start losing teeth, it's embarrassing to smile. It's difficult to chew. Your face looks different. Your speech changes. And at the final stage of this disease, you end up needing very invasive surgery, $60,000, where a surgeon has to place titanium screws into the bones of your face so that for the rest of your life, you have fake teeth. That's what happens at the end of this infection. Luckily, of course, we caught this now. We caught it before all of that. And if we treat this properly, we can prevent all of that. Now, let me pause for a second.
Yeah.
What did I do? I established the problem exists. You have a gum infection eating away at the jawbone that holds your teeth in. Established. I'm worried about it. Establish that. Next, I told the story of the disease. Finally, I came back. We can do this. We can stop this. You see, by them hearing the story, they now understand why they should change their schedule and pay money to have treatment.
Mm-hmm.
But without the story, they lose the why. Then case acceptance just happens from the people that kind of trust us and respect us as dentists. It doesn't happen for the majority. It happens for the minority. And now what's going to happen when you learn more procedures and that treatment plan gets even more expensive? You know, without understanding why properly, you lose the ability to kind of get your brain to say yes to something that you don't understand. It costs money and it's going to hurt and you don't even know you need it. And, you know, take time out of your day and just the winds of life are going to blow you away from that dental practice. And here's the thing. Unfortunately, what I just did, I only use my words because we're on a podcast.
Yeah.
But what's so much more valuable than words is while I describe this disease progression, I show the storybook of the disease progression. I show the photo of missing some teeth. I show the photo of the invasive surgery. I show what the disease progression looks like, just like a cardiologist would walk me through what the disease progression looks like and what the ultimate risks are of a heart condition so that I can understand what I'm getting into and why I need to say yes. I, the dentist, need to build the skill of telling that story as well, specifically for the dentistry that's needed. Disease and decay needs that strategy. There's also dentistry that's wanted. That's a different strategy. But no one woke up in the morning and said, oh my God, I hope today's the day I have a gum infection. I really want that scaling and root plan. No, we have to have a different kind of story. That same communication strategy applies to cavities, to cracked teeth, to crowns, to all kinds of things we find in dentistry. But unfortunately, this is the part that upsets me. We can say it on a podcast. I could say it at one of my seminars. I could tell a dentist I coach one-on-one. And I'm just offering 10 minutes of entertainment services for the dental profession. What does it actually take to change the future? It takes bullet points of notes, examples of stories and analogies, like a cracked tooth is a crack in a windshield that keeps getting bigger until it breaks. It takes writing it down like we're a student in a lecture and studying for the tests we take the minute we see the next patient that needs that. It takes behavior change. It takes buying technology so I can take the images, so I can do smile previews. I can do, you know, AI on the x-rays. I can have the metrics so I can even see what our score is and is it getting better or worse. It takes an investment in technology and it takes an investment in micromanaging the implementation of it with our team, which it doesn't just mean tell them to do something. It means to micromanage it every patient for a month and to audit it thereafter. Then you end up in a different place in life. Then as you diagnose more dentistry, you truly have the well-rounded clinical side of case acceptance to support the growth of the practice while doing better dentistry. Does that make sense?
Totally. Scott, let me chime in here and maybe paint the picture from the opposite side of the operatory as a patient, right? I've owned part of a dental practice. I've worked in dentistry almost my entire career. Steve's wife is a hygienist. He's worked in dentistry for 6 years. Still, when I get in the chair and have dentistry diagnosed on me, I should know more substantially than the general consumer about dentistry. I know what all the diseases are. I know what the consequences are. And still, when things are presented to me, I have to build that bridge myself. And hopefully I know enough about that to be like, yeah, you know, that's worth $3,000 to me. But that bridge needs to be built by the dentist, like you said, telling the story, telling what could happen, telling what the 10 years, 15 years down the road leads to. And it's missed. It's so missed. And it's when you understand something on a certain level, and this is something I've noticed in, I run the marketing team here at DI. I've been doing marketing for a long time. When you understand something really well, sometimes you overestimate other people's ability to understand the same thing. So when you present that to them and you use words that you're used to hearing and seeing, and you think you built that bridge, you didn't. But the way that you just laid that out in that story, everyone's going to understand that, right? So really, in telling that story, make sure that you can take that to someone that is your child, right? Or your friend that is not in dentistry, and that they understand that story. Because you might think, yeah, I made that perfectly clear, but you have years and years of experience in the dental field. So build that story in a way that is understandable.
And yeah, one of the big, unfortunately, fraudulent moments that a patient creates in dental practice is when they nod yes out of respect as we tell our spiel. And that gives us this false feedback that our words are understood and respected and followed. And then, you know, they're nodding yes to us, they get to the treatment coordinator and they nod no, and they come up with their excuses and they leave, avoiding conflict and avoiding, you know, having to deal back with us. Unfortunately, that has caused a lot of bad habits. Whatever our spiel is, it's got to be the very best. It's one of the largest driving forces of the success of our career. And the patients getting the work done that they need is actually what we say. And, you know, words, however, no matter, even if you say it right, I'll tell you right now, and I hope my wife doesn't listen to this, but I'm a really good communicator. I tell my wife exactly what I think, exactly what I mean, and somehow she still didn't hear it. And she swears she tells me everything she means and says, and there's no way I believe that because she means all kinds of things she never said. And neither one of us are wrong and neither one of us are right. The way we process words comes a lot from what we're paying attention to and what we're triggered by and what our past experiences are. There's no way a patient will understand what it's like to have a tooth crack in half down to blood vessels. They didn't even know teeth had blood vessels. They don't know where to look at it. They don't know what it means. They haven't seen it. But we might say that, thinking it's the right thing to say as they nod their head yes. That is why supplementing this conversation with photos is so important. Because as I talk about a tooth breaking in half and the patient staring at someone else's tooth that already did break in half, that photo alone with my story make demand case acceptance no matter what it costs. They're not thinking, is this worth a couple thousand dollars? They're thinking, oh my Lord, I need to get this done as soon as possible. You see, so it completely changes the conversation when they truly understand. Stories and analogies help with that. They really do help with that. So I think dentists that use simple analogies, that stay away from explaining procedures, but they use analogies to explain the disease, and they go, like I said, from start to finish on the disease progression, using a photo, are going to have really good case acceptance opportunities with these patients, no matter how much you're diagnosing, because now they finally understand why. And let me add one more thing. That patient, if I explained perio to that patient the way I did, I probably gave them the very best exam experience of their dental life, because I may have been the very first patient to actually have a good enough bedside manner to have them truly understand what's happening. If I'm using photos, they're going to think we're high tech. Those things, this explanation, these stories, it builds trust because they haven't had it with past dentists. And that trust has a lasting effect on our ability to help them, on our ability to collect from them, on our ability to enjoy treating them. So it's not just about, can I get my numbers up? It's about having a culture of a practice where every time the patients experience our exam and other things as well, they look back on that and say, that's the best I've ever had. And imagine if you did need a heart procedure. Shame on a cardiologist for not taking the time to tell you the story and have you truly understand what's going on. You see, if we don't do it, we now may not have, it may create the opposite. We may lose trust. We may cause confusion. We may seem money hungry because they don't understand the real problem. They just understand that we probably have some fancy car in the back. Does that make sense?
Now, Scott.
All right, so that's the clinical side.
Oh, go ahead, Adam. Did you want to jump in?
I just said that definitely makes sense.
So as we wrap up this idea, we segmented into two elements. There's this clinical side of the conversation, heavily focused on a compelling story, helping the patient understand, and there's the financial side. Is there anything you want to share to wrap up the clinical side, Scott? Or do you want to leave it at that tip and then we'll jump into financial?
Oh my God, I spend hours on this in my seminars.
I know you could probably spend
so much. Yeah. You know, I think that let me just say that if you haven't mastered the ability to talk about dentistry to achieve this effect, then this may be one of the most important things in your career to focus on. That when you look at dentists that know how to do great dentistry, and then you look at dentists that know how to communicate in this way, they live completely separate lives many times. The ones that know how to do great dentistry, but they're doing it on a patient base that doesn't want it, that doesn't understand it, with fees that are low and in network because they can't seem to fill their schedule and they can't afford to hire the best employees. I mean, it has a domino effect of stuff that isn't good. And yet the communicators that just naturally get excellent case acceptance are in a position of strength to mold their practice and patient base to this kind of dream level that we aspire to. It's not a dream. It's the reality of having more dentistry fall on your schedule than you know what to do with. And that creates the position of power and strength to mold your practice. That more dentistry comes mostly from this communication. It does not come mostly from new patient flow. It does not come mostly from diagnosis. It comes mostly from being able to speak and show in a way that your patients do say yes.
Yeah, 100% agree with that. Now, let's move into the financial conversation. You know, I think, you know, as I'm like sitting here thinking, how has that changed over the years? You know, today, maybe more than ever, we're just bombarded by people that are trying to take money from all of our patients, right? Like Apple wants some of it, and Google wants some of it, and some random sweatshirt company, some, you know, whatever. Like, there's so many advertisers trying to convince the same people we're trying to convince, hey, come and spend some money here. It's going to make your life better. It's going to have these benefits. And consumers are continuing to spend in our economy right now. So that's one of the things that, like, money was free a couple years ago. People have wondered, hey, like, are people going to stop spending? But people are still spending today. So we haven't seen dramatic slowdowns. So people are still willing. There's not like some big depression happening today. That's the point I'm trying to make. So if you're out there thinking, oh no, like patients just don't have money anymore. Like, they are spending money. And, you know, I'm interested in Scott on your thoughts, because once you get to the financial side, who's having that conversation? Is it the doctor? Is it a treatment coordinator? What have you seen that works there? And then if you'll get into some of the dynamics of how to actually present the finances of the treatment, that'd be sweet.
Yeah, I mean, anyone can have the conversation. Typically, what I would prefer to see is a treatment coordinator specialized in this conversation, doing the majority of it, so that people that aren't necessarily as specialized or necessarily skilled, or people that have more valuable time than that, are doing other things. Cool. I also like this separation of clinical need versus financial conversation, so that we can in some ways kind of protect, you know, we don't want to align a dentist making money with diagnosing more in the patient's eyes. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure that the dentist is viewed as the diagnostician and not the money collector. But before I try this, for sure, there's some dentists that can do this dance very well. For sure that exists. There's some assistants and hygienists, of course, that could do it. But in general, having a really well-skilled front office person handling this conversation in an efficient manner is going to bring the very best final results, in my opinion. And notice I said efficient. This is a short conversation. This is a conversation free of emotion, free of chit-chat. We're not talking about puppies and babies. We're not bonding over going camping and hiking. This is a conversation about, I'm busy, I work in a dental practice, you're busy, you got to get on to your life. We're going to have a logistical conversation about scheduling and paying. This is not a closing conversation. I need a closer, a salesperson to sit down for 15 minutes in a private room and rehash everything they need and go over and give them an insurance lesson 101 of downgrades and coverage tables. All of those things I just said are not part of this, hurt case acceptance. Hmm. You print out a form with 93 numbers on it and 18 line items of every code itemized and insurance payments on its own category. That sheet of paper is not even written in English. It's so freaking confusing. It causes a domino effect of problems. What we need is a short logistical conversation without emotion, which means the numbers and the insurance needs to look incredibly simple to understand. And we also need payment options that will work for any patient, patients with money, with credit, without credit. And all of that needs to protect the practice. So that's what we have to kind of reverse engineer. And it's pretty simple to do. It really is pretty simple to do this, but it goes completely against what treatment coordinators think you should do. You see, treatment coordinators have been trained by dozens of patients a day that they need to explain insurance. They've been trained that they need to go over every procedure. They've been trained they need to sell. They've been trained dozens of times a day to do the wrong thing, to the point they think patients need that. What they don't understand is the cause. The cause of patients needing that is confusion on the treatment plan and a lack of understanding why they need anything to begin with from the doctor's side. When you take a patient who doesn't know why they need something and you show them a complicated treatment plan from your software, of course they need a long-winded explanation of a conversation that impacts case acceptance negatively, of course. So what I want to do is I want to show them, whatever I'm going to print for them, it needs to be in layman's terms, white fillings, porcelain crown. It does not need to be itemized. You itemize something, the brain's wired to pick and choose from the list. We don't want a list. We want a bundle of treatment for their plan. We're not tempting them to say yes to this crown and no to that buildup. It is a bundle of care, and that bundle of care has one price. And of course, if we have insurance, that's great. We're going to highlight the benefits of insurance. I save this much and I save that much, but there's one total price. You pay $692 to get health. I'm not itemizing everything. That's what patients actually want to know. How much will this cost? They're not saying, can you please go tooth by tooth, code by code, and explain to me how much each thing costs and what the insurance will cover, and let me just pick and choose based on me not being a doctor, not knowing what I actually need clinically, to just come up with something based on what Dr. Insurance says. Like, I'll take the root canal, but please don't give me the post. Like, what the heck, right? That's not what people need. If they truly understand the disease, they want to, okay, how much is this going to cost, and how can we schedule it, and how can I pay? And how can we pay? Well, we should, some people can just pay. So option one, pay today, pay the day exam, everything. Pay today, and we'll book out all the appointments in the doctor's schedule. I wouldn't call that prepaying. I'd call that paying. Like you want to buy a ticket to a concert, you buy the ticket today. The concert's in 2 weeks, you buy the ticket today. You want a seat on a flight, you buy the ticket today. You want a seat in the doctor's schedule, you buy a ticket today. And so that's an option, pay today. And if patients understand what they need and they're not confused by your presentation, a lot of people pick pay today. But if they can't pay today, what are we going to do then? We need to put them on a payment plan. Don't call it financing. Don't call it, you know, well, we're going to apply this way and that way, and you may or may not get approved for this or that and this APR and that. Nope. Would you like to pay today, or would you like to be on a monthly payment plan? And if they say monthly payment plan, run them through the plans you use and show them what that looks like. Make it that simple. You see, I'm not asking them to pick and choose from the treatment. I'm only asking them to pick and choose. The first time I'm asking them is, which way are you going to pay? Are you going to say yes and pay up front? Or are you going to say yes and pay on a monthly payment plan? Both ways you say yes. And that conversation can be in under 3 minutes. Under 3 minutes, it can happen in an operatory, but it should happen that day. They've been drinking our diagnostic Kool-Aid, the day they've seen the photos and heard the story. That's the day we need to lock this in and secure it in our schedule and contractually on the financial side as well. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. So, I want to make sure I'm like hearing what I'm hearing and then saying it back to you. So in my mind, I'm trying to picture like a patient walking into that treatment coordinator's room and just like quickly hearing like, okay, what exactly happened? So you said like, hey, this isn't like, we're not going to like, we don't want to have too much chit chat. We want to get to the point. So like, are they walking in, sitting down, and you like slide that paper across the table? You know, is there like a quick hello? What does that look like?
Well, Mr. Patient, Stephen.
Yeah.
You heard Dr. Luna. I need to get you scheduled as soon as possible. So let me go over this with you. You need 3 white fillings and a porcelain crown. And you've got great insurance. But if we don't use your insurance by the end of this year, you actually lose all those benefits. Like they're thrown away. So we've got to schedule these fillings and this crown this year, the year 2024. Now, it's the total cost for all this. It's a lot of cost. It's $2,234, but you've got great insurance. So you got insurance discounts of $907 and insurance payments of up to $743. So your total is only $584. Now you've got a decision to make. You've got 2 choices. You need to pick between these 2 choices. Option one, you pay $584 today, and we will go ahead and schedule all your appointments and reserve the doctor's time for you. Or option two, if it helps, we can put you on a simple monthly payment plan. What works best for you?
Oh, that's so good.
I literally just
easy. Present. Yeah.
Yeah. And I and the key here is to shut up. So I don't mean that in an inappropriate or rude way, but what we don't want to do is vomit all of our knowledge all over people. But that's what a lot of doctors and treatment coordinators do. You see, a lot of people in the dental field, when faced with a conflict situation, like a conflict, me telling you, you need work, or a conflict, me telling you, it's going to cost money. In order to avoid that conflict and feel good about ourselves, we just kind of go around it and just start teaching them everything we know. Well, this is what a crown is, and we do this, and we do that, and here's a photo of it, here's the best lab in the country crown, da 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 da. We teach, and we teach, and we teach, because that feels good. We're providing this teaching moment. But teaching them what to do does not cause case acceptance. Treatment coordinator, well, here's our option. We're going to apply for this, and then you will find out immediately, and you may be approved for that, and you got others. Nope. But that's what they do. They revert to their spiel about teaching because it avoids the conflict, the direct conversation of, here's what you need. Here's how much it costs. How are you going to pay me? But really, that shorter conversation that's direct is the one that works. And I don't care if they owe $584 or $15,000. That same strategy, believe it or not, is what works. That's the strategy that we need to do. And of course, people listening to this have been trained maybe by decades, thousands of patients needing something else. That's not what they naturally need. They don't come out of the womb wanting to know as an adult how their insurance breaks down. That's not how our brains are wired. That is what you've caused them to become by printing what you print and saying what you say. You print something different, you say something different, they respond differently.
And now, if I'm sitting there listening, honestly, I would probably like go rewind this like 5 minutes whenever Scott started our quick little conversation and use an AI tool and like transcribe that or like type some quick bullets. Like, okay, what exactly did he just do? And then go practice that. Like what a great way, or practice that with your team if you've got a treatment coordinator and just talk them through exactly what he just did and try it out. Like, I'm a huge fan of, if we're going to try and make progress in the business, let's like check, like Scott said, get some measurement, you know, look at DI, where are we at with case acceptance? And then let's go implement this new way of talking or this new strategy and see if we can't keep like tweaking that number up and seeing our case acceptance improve. Now, is there anything, Scott, we're coming up at the end of time here. I've got one last kind of, it's not really a curveball question. It's just a question we ask to every guest, which is, what does growth in dentistry mean to you? So we'll come to that in a second. But is there anything else you want to share with case acceptance? Like I said to the audience at the beginning, I wanted you on because you have so many years of getting into the weeds of this whole process, both the clinical conversation and the financial conversation. I wanted them to hear your advice on case acceptance. Is there anything else you'd want to throw out there specifically for case acceptance before we jump into the last kind of high level question?
Just recognize that we have to be an excellent diagnostician. We have to be an excellent communicator for case acceptance. We have to be an excellent clinician to do the work. And we have to be an excellent CEO to manage the team and the financials and the operations. And if we recognize that there's those four kind of big categories of our career, that's the first step, because success is not going to come from doing the same thing we've always done and just doing more of it and faster and white knuckling it. We have to understand that there's these components that really do impact where our life goes. So we're talking right now in part about the communication aspect, and we're also talking in part about the operations, the systems, the policies of the business, and the numbers that Dental Intel measures, right? So just everyone listening to this, this is a big kind of project to become a master of these types of things. I mean, I spend days and days in our seminars, in our intense seminars, like teaching this kind of stuff, and there's so many layers to it. But the good thing is, you don't have to master them all. Every layer you get better at is a permanent increase in your wealth of choice in your life. You know, the money you bring in, the happiness you have, the power you have to choose your own fate. You don't have to do everything. Every little thing you check off is another step up in success. But let's go ahead to your last curveball. Yeah. I can't wait for the curveball.
Steve, yeah, before we get to the curveball. when I owned the practice that I owned, we went to one of your seminars, Scott, and it changed the way that I thought about a lot of things. And I know you do these seminars. We touched on, the case acceptance part of this seminar is hours long. You know, we were here for 30 minutes at the most. So because you educate on this and educate on so many more pieces that are impactful to me, I want to highlight one thing that you said. You probably don't even remember that you said it. Someone in the audience asked this really oddball question, like, well, what if you get this type of patient that says this thing and they do this when they come in? And my brain is immediate problem solver. So I'm thinking, okay, how do we engineer the system around someone that might do that? And you stopped and you said, don't build systems around the crazies. Yeah. And it shifted the way that I thought about things. You have to build systems around the majority and you'll get the crazies, right? And that was literally changed the way that I approached business, because I always wanted to try to please everyone and figure out systems that worked for everyone. But if people want to do more of this, learn more about your case acceptance techniques, your business management techniques, where can they register for your events that you're doing?
Yeah, go to this website. It's my name, scottluna.com. Actually, my last name is spelled really weird, so I guess I should spell it out.
Yeah, do.
Scott with two T's and then L-E-U-N-E.com, scottluna.com. I'm from Amsterdam, so it's a Dutch name. But you're absolutely right. When you build systems around the crazy people in the crazy situations, they become unmanageable and ineffective and definitely not efficient. You build systems around the masses to gain efficient predictability, and you deal with the crazy people and the crazy situations case by case the best you can. And that is probably the least amount of stress, highest amount of reward you could have.
Yep. Awesome. We'll put the website in the show notes as well. I just wanted to, like, you gave a really brief overview of what you go into case acceptance wise. So I wanted to make sure they knew where they could register for your events if they're interested.
Excellent. I appreciate that.
And I'll say this too. Scott does three different courses. I've been to all of them. They're all phenomenal. There's like a startup and design course. There's kind of his flagship practice management mastery course. And then he has a multi-practice course, and all of those, you know, whichever one kind of fits the mold of where you're at in your career and interest is just out of this park. Just so good. So
I'm probably going to upset some of my team members, but what you don't know is that we're about to roll out something we've been working on, a CEO mastery course, a dental CEO mastery course, and this big team training boot camp experience. So I'm sorry, team members. I probably was not supposed to say that, but I couldn't help myself. That's coming out. I'm super excited about it.
Sweet. Well, then go refresh the website every couple of days and just wait until you see those pop on there. So you make sure you get one of the first seats in those. Scott, let's finish with the question, what does growth in dentistry mean to you? We ask that to every single guest on the podcast.
Oh, wow. Okay. Right off the top of my head here, shooting from the hip.
Mm-hmm.
Growth of dentistry means to me throwing away what works and having this uncomfortable confidence to do the next thing that works better. And the result of that should be better care, it should be better profit, and it should be a better working environment. And if you can provide better care, better profit, and a better working environment, you are accomplishing something that is turning dentistry into fueling your life, as opposed to dentistry sucking away your life. So I guess I'll say it again. I'll try to repeat my words just to make sure I was clear here. Throwing away what works is a really hard thing to do, but I could be the star quarterback in the state of Texas for high school, and I might have to throw away my throwing technique if I plan on competing at the top pro level someday. So we've got to throw away what works in order to do the better thing, and that becomes uncomfortable. And we have to have that uncomfortable confidence in doing so to get through that learning curve of failing first before we succeed. And again, that growth better be for the right thing. It better help the patient, it better help the business, and it better help our team. And if that happens, we have more power to change our life. And dentistry fuels us instead of sucking us dry. That's kind of what it means to me.
That's a great answer and great advice. Thank you, Scott, for joining us today. And thank you, Adam, for co-hosting with me. And thank you, everyone, for joining and listening in once again to another episode. Thank you for joining the Growth in Dentistry podcast. We encourage you all to keep growing, and we will talk soon.